And I, first, I have to apologize because Omar and I kind of, our first two cases right out of the gate, are neither of them is a Fifth right. Circuit case. And so this next case, the Blixeth v. Credit Suisse decision, comes out of the Ninth Circuit and also kind of touches on what Omar just talked about, 524E. The reason I chose it actually is because it honed in right on a very big issue in the Fifth Circuit, which is third-party releases, but not really not directly on the third-party releases. This case was actually about what apparently I've just discovered this week is a hot-button issue for me, exculpatory clauses in Chapter 11 plans. I didn't know that until this week. But let me get into it. So yes, I am spending my first few minutes talking about exculpation in a Chapter 11 plan. First, what is exculpation, and is there room for distinction between exculpation and a third-party release? So for those of us who've been involved in the very hard negotiations over Chapter 11 plans, you know that there's a lot of give and take in the process. Debtors, creditors, other parties in interest, we all are advocating for our clients. We're all trying to drive hard bargains in some instances. But once we get to a deal, that deal is supposed to be the deal. Once the plan goes effective, all sales are final, all settlements are supposed to be completed and consummated. And the idea is we don't want our clients, and we definitely don't, as professionals, don't want to be looking over our shoulders for years to come over whether we maybe drove too hard a bargain in the context, in the process of negotiating those releases, those settlements, and those transactions. So exculpatory clauses within a plan are critical components to bring finality to whatever was negotiated in that plan. And a typical exculpatory clause has really three standard components. One is it releases claims arising post-petition, such as negotiations over the plan, negotiations over the sale or the DIP order. Two, the release parties typically include the debtor, the committee, but it often includes all the other parties that were involved in the negotiations. So your secured creditors, the purchaser, all those other parties that were involved in the sausage making. And three, the releases always carve out things such as willful misconduct, gross negligence, and fraud. So if you're worried about a committee member who's gone rogue, who maybe committed some bankruptcy crime, as in some other cases that are pending in Houston this summer, don't worry, that clearly would have been carved out of an exculpatory clause, a typical one. So, I mean, in general, exculpatory clauses are fairly non-controversial, you would think. They don't release claims that existed at the time of the bankruptcy filing, only things that would have arisen based on post-bankruptcy conduct, typically. So the analysis in Pack Lumber, remember, Pack Lumber struck down exculpatory provisions in a plan that went beyond just releasing the debtor and the committee members. And the rationale for doing so was not very extensive. The court first confirmed that the clause at issue was typical. It had those three components that I just mentioned. And after explaining that the issue was not equitably moot, remember, Pack Lumber also touched on equitable mootness, apparently something else that I talk about often, the court simply just rejected the exculpatory provision, or it rejected the other circuits, like the Second and the Fourth Circuits, more lenient approaches, because the Fifth Circuit said, well, those just aren't consistent with Zale Corp and our reading of 524E. And then the ultimate decision to strike down the exculpatory clause in Pacific Lumber, it falls at the end of the decision. I'm going to read it for everyone because it's been about 11 years since we've thought about this. The court said, there are no allegations in this record that either MRC/Marathon or their debtors or the debtors' officers or directors were jointly liable for any of Palco's or Scopac's pre-petition debt. They are not guarantors or sureties, nor are they insurers. Instead, the essential function of the exculpation clause proposed here is to absolve the release parties from any negligent conduct that occurred during the course of the bankruptcy, as I just mentioned. And then the Fifth Circuit wraps it up and says, the fresh start section 524E provides to debtors is not intended to serve this purpose. So there's a couple of takeaways from this. One, the Fifth Circuit saw no distinction between third-party releases, and two, and exculpation clauses. And two, the only basis, according to the Fifth Circuit, for exculpating third parties was section 524E. So that's been our jurisprudence over the last decade plus. Now let's bring this forward to where I started, the Ninth Circuit's Credit Suisse decision from June. Because until that decision in the Ninth Circuit was actually a lot like the Fifth Circuit. They had a series of decisions: Underhill, American Hardwoods, Loewenschuss, I'm probably not saying that name right, where they were going with the Fifth Circuit and finding that third-party exculpations were like third-party releases and you just couldn't do it. In Credit Suisse, factually, all you really need to know is the exculpation clause at issue was the typical kind, the one that has three standard components that I mentioned. So then why did the Ninth Circuit come to the opposite conclusion in Credit Suisse? Well, first, it looked at its prior decisions and it explained that Underhill, American Hardwoods, and Loewenschuss involved what the court viewed as sweeping non-debtor releases, not releases of participants in the plan development and approval process for actions taken during the process. So right away, the Ninth Circuit is starting to tell us they see a distinction between third-party exculpations and third-party releases.